From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Fake news. President Trump cried 3 times in 3 hours in yesterday's tweet storm, attacking the New York Times, the Washington Post. He took CNN, NBC, CBS, and ABC to task the day before. Journalists are frustrated, some enraged, calling out press secretaries for not allowing cameras or audio recordings in White House briefings, unloading in those briefings. This hour On Point, what is going on with the White House and the press? You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What's your take on all this tension? What does it mean for our democracy, our republic, when the White House briefing room is so fraught? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Tuesday, White House Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Mike Huckabee's daughter, tore into the press and fake news from the briefing podium after 3 reporters resigned at CNN over a retracted story. A reporter in the briefing pushed back hard, accusing Huckabee Sanders of being inflammatory. That was Brian Karam, executive editor for Sentinel Newspapers in Maryland, where he covers the White House, also a columnist for Playboy. He's with us. Brian Karam, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me, Tom.
I don't know if it's right to say that you snapped, but you certainly snapped at Sarah Huckabee Sanders on Tuesday. What happened there?
Well, as my kid said, if that was snapping, Dad, she was lucky you really didn't. But it wasn't. It was what happened was is I guess it goes back to the president coming back from his first overseas trip, and since he's returned, there has been an increase in the. There was the Comey firing, an increase in the Russian investigation, 2 suits filed against him for the violation of the emoluments clause. Yeah. Those issues are of central import to the republic and to the press. And instead of focusing on those, he would rather flip the script and focus on us, cut down his access to us. And what happened Tuesday is after a week of not having an on-camera briefing, they had one, and it was quickly evident to me that the sole reason for putting it on camera and live was so that the administration could bash the press. And at that point, I'd had enough and spoke up.
We heard on Monday, I mean, there's this tension over the fact that they're now saying no cameras, no audio at a lot of the White House press briefings. This is very unusual. This was CNN's Jim Acosta trying to cut in to ask a question, and Press Secretary Sean Spicer coming back at him with this.
There's no camera on, Jim.
Well, maybe we should turn the cameras on, Sean. Why don't we turn the cameras on?
Jen.
Why don't we turn the cameras on?
I'm sorry that you have to do it. Jen, go ahead.
Why not turn the cameras on, Sean? They're in the room. The lights are on.
They're in the room. The lights are on. We're all here. Why not cameras for the American people? That was Monday. On Tuesday, and of course, you'd had CNN with 3 people who left the network there after a story on Russia and the Trump community was retracted. And Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders really went after them and others for dishonesty.
There are multiple other instances where that outlet that you referenced has been repeatedly wrong and had to point that out or be corrected. There's a video circulating now, whether it's accurate or not. I don't know, but I would encourage everybody in this room and, frankly, everybody across the country to take a look at it. I think if it is accurate, I think it's a disgrace to all of media, to all of journalism. I think that we have gone to a place where if the media can't be trusted to report the news, then that's a dangerous place for America. And I think if that is the place that certain outlets are going, particularly for the purpose of spiking ratings, and if that's coming directly from the top, I think that's even more scary and certainly more disgraceful.
Dangerous, a disgrace, scary, more disgraceful. I mean, this is the sound of the White House briefing room yesterday. Brian Karam, our guest, was there. Tuesday, and you'll hear how he came in. Here's a little more of Sanders.
I think that we should take a really good look at what we are focused on, what we are covering, and making sure that it's actually accurate and it's honest. If we make the slightest mistake, the slightest word is off, it is just an absolute tirade from a lot of people in this room. But news outlets get to go on day after day and cite unnamed sources, use stories without sources, have, you mentioned the Scaramucci story where they had to have reporters resign.
Come on, you're inflaming everybody right here, right now, with those words. This administration has done that as well. Why in the name of heavens? Any one of us, right, are replaceable. And any one of us, if we don't get it right, the audience has the opportunity to turn the channel or not read us.
I think you have
been elected to serve for 4 years at least. There's no option other than that. We're here to ask you questions.
Right.
You're here to provide the answers. And what you just did is inflammatory to people all over the country who look at it and say, see, once again, the president is right and everybody else out here is fake media. And everybody in this room is only trying to do their job.
I disagree completely. First of all, I think if anything has been inflamed, it's the dishonesty that often takes place by the news media. And I think it is outrageous for you to accuse me of inflaming a story when I was simply trying to respond to his question.
Holy cow, this is the White House press briefing room. That's the Deputy Secretary. Press secretary there, and my guest Brian Karam, who was pushing back hard. Right, I mean, it was a pretty incredible jump on the press that she went with right there, disgraceful, dangerous, and all the rest. You came back very hard. What was bubbling up in you, Brian, in that moment that led you to say, wait a minute, Sarah?
Well, just the blanket condemnation of the press and the fact that at the very beginning of the tirade, she asked us to look at a video that she wasn't sure was factual or not, but gee, if it was, boy, was she angry. So
this
she's
is
defending
the James O'Keefe, Project Veritas sort of conservative activist thing where he's gone out and found some CNN producer who said the Russia stuff is BS. And I don't know what they actually said. He's edited this stuff in crazy ways in the past. I'm not sure about this one, but this was the White House press deputy press secretary saying, go watch this.
Go watch it, and she's
not
sure if it's accurate. I don't know if it's true, but go watch it. Meanwhile, we're the fake media. Mind you, we've had a president who's intimated that he had recordings of James Comey that he didn't have. He's berated the press from the very beginning, has said that we're the enemy of the people and that we're fake media. And on one end, you know, you've got people in the press room. And as I've said, I've defended and will defend the things that this administration has done correctly, especially in regards to the press. Sean Spicer and Sarah have both. They've included Skype positions on the on-camera day so that people outside the Beltway can be in that meeting. They have today they're going to bring out two or three people for guest speakers roles. We've heard from the cabinet on background briefings. That's very good. They have also not called on the first row. They've called on me. They've called on others in that press room. So they've done some things that add to transparency. But while they're doing that and saying that the president supports the First Amendment, you have the president tweeting out that we're the enemy of the people. So which end of the dog do you believe? The end that's growling at you or the end that's wagging its tail? I look at the teeth. And the bully is the president, not the press, and not his staff. I believe that if all things were equal, it wouldn't be that way. But the thing is everything in that press room is geared to the president's ego. Everything in that press room is geared to appear to one person, one audience, and that's the president. And he wants adulation. We are fake news whenever we produce news that he does not like, and he is not shy about putting out press that he supports. Now, at the White House Correspondents' Dinner earlier this year, he refused to show up and went after us and had his own counter rally. He was seen at a rally yesterday where he wouldn't allow the press. He's already running for re-election. Most presidents are comfortable running for re-election by actually doing their job. I would like to see him do his job.
We don't have a unified press these days exactly. On Fox News yesterday,
no.
On Outnumbered, you had Washington Times editor there. This was Charles Hurt, really going after you for that interaction. Let's listen just a little bit of that. You had plenty of defenders too, but here was on Fox.
Freedom of press is a loud, bumpy affair, and I have no problem with it. But that's just obnoxious. It seems like the guy's getting a little sensitive. He's playing to the sort of audience in
yes.
the room.
He wants to get on the TV.
And he wants to get on TV, and it's obnoxious. She's criticizing the press. She has every right to criticize the press. And the idea that she doesn't, or that somehow she's inciting violence or whatever, by calling out the media for getting things wrong and for completely having an absolute bias against this president.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like it.
All right.
It's just ridiculous.
Never seen anything like it. A lot of people agree on that. On the CNN, problems over the story that they've retracted the three journalists who resigned. You had Chuck Todd yesterday defending them, saying we've got a war on the press by this White House. Here was Chuck Todd.
Tonight, well, not just tonight, but I'm obsessed with the White House's war on the press and on media. And let's be clear about this. That war is nothing less than a war on the truth. Do we get it right all the time? Nope, we don't. And when we don't, we run a correction. And in some cases, people lose their jobs. That's what just happened at CNN. CNN took responsibility for its mistakes. You know, at this network, we've done it quite a few times publicly as well. But because we try to get it right. We take what we do seriously because trust, viewers and readers' trust is all we have. And without that, we're nothing.
War on the press and on the media. Nothing less than a war on the truth. Brian Karam was there and spoke up on Tuesday. Is that what you see here, Brian?
I wrote a column basically on the same thing for Playboy during the Washington White House Correspondents Association dinner and pointed out indeed that I believe there is a war on the press. And it's not a war on the press. It's a war on the republic. We are the republic. My First Amendment rights are no different than yours or anyone else's. And when I stand up asking for those First Amendment rights, I'm not asking for anything special. I'm asking for my constitutional rights. And to deny me my rights is to deny you yours. Who am I? I'm the one that's in the room. I'm the one that has made it my life's goal to disseminate information. That is the First Amendment right to do. The government has no right to stop it.
The president, Charles Hurt at Washington Times, says absolute bias against this president.
Well, I'm sorry, there's absolute bias at Fox News. There's absolute bias at Breitbart. There's absolute bias. Bias is not the problem. I have no problem with people's bias. I have a problem with people not being able to speak. I have a problem when Ann Coulter couldn't speak. It used to be in this country, I do not believe in what you say, but I will defend to death your right to say it. Today, I need a safe space. I don't want to hear you go away. And that's not right.
And you're saying the White House is looking for a safe space rather than a briefing room?
I think what the White House would like to have is a totally compliant press that's a propaganda arm for this president. And there is a war on the press. They're after us. And make no mistake, he's cunning for us.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about what is going on with the White House and the press. High tension in the briefing room, fireworks from the podium, respect in the ditch, and what it all means for our democracy. Brian Karam is with us. He's executive editor for Sentinel Newspapers in Maryland, covers the White House, columnist for Playboy. On Tuesday, he was the one at the back of the room who spoke up and said, hey, wait a minute, Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you are being inflammatory toward the press. Is there a war on the press, a war on the truth, as Chuck Todd at NBC says? Brian Karam says yes. What do you see? You can join us this hour. What have you made of the rage, the wrath of Sean Spicer, Sarah Huckabee Sanders from the briefing room podium? What do you make of the frustration, the fury of the press? What has gone off the rails here? Margaret Tolliv and Major Garrett join us in just a moment. You know, part of what's happened here, Brian, is cameras have been shut down at many of these briefings now, and often audio as well. That's got people really in a twist. This is not the norm. Here's some sound from Monday. Audio only. No cameras at this one. The White House just sort of willy-nilly deciding what they're going to do. And Press Secretary Sean Spicer took heat from reporters for not allowing cameras to videotape the press briefing.
Now we see you on camera about once a week. Is that a new normal that we would expect?
We'll see. We'll continue to mix things
why
up.
Why are the cameras off, Sean? Why did you turn them off? Can you just give us an answer to that? Can you tell us why you turned the cameras off? Why are they off, Sean?
It is a legitimate question.
You are a taxpayer-funded spokesman for the United States government. Can you at least give us an explanation as to why the cameras are off?
Can we get this out of the way? Can we address the cameras issue?
Some days will happen, some days we won't. The president's going to speak today in the Rose Garden. I want the president's voice to carry the day. This is nothing inconsistent with what we've said since day one.
Hey, maybe we'll have cameras at the press briefing at the White House. Maybe we won't. CNN's Brooke Baldwin last week talked with CNN's White House correspondent Jim Acosta. Acosta saying the White House press briefings and the man who leads them becoming, in his words, kind of useless.
The White House press secretary is getting to a point, Brooke, where he's just kind of useless. You know, if he can't come out and answer the questions and they're just not going to do this on camera or audio, why are we even having these briefings or these gaggles in the first place? That's the White House behind me, the White House. And it's just
It's bizarre. I don't know what world we're living in right now, Brooke. We're standing at the White House, and they bring us into the briefing room here at the White House, and they won't answer these questions on camera or let us record the audio. I don't know why everybody is going along with this.
But you've got others, Peggy Noonan at the Wall Street Journal, conservative columnist there, saying, hey, media, take it down some notches here. Take it down some notches. Well, the president not exactly taking it down some notches, tweeting all over the place today. I mean, he's been taking heat from Jill Scarborough and on Morning Joe, along with Mika Sherman there. And he's tweeting today, I heard poorly rated Morning Joe speaks badly of me. Don't watch anymore. Then how come low IQ crazy Mika along with psycho Joe came? Another tweet, to Mar-a-Lago, three nights in a row around New Year's and insisted on joining me. She was bleeding badly from a facelift. I said no. And this is a president that really will get down in the ditch in a hurry or maybe take you there. Brian Karam spoke up loudly on Tuesday. A couple of other White House correspondents of note with us right now. Margaret Tolliff, senior White House correspondent for Bloomberg, joins us from Washington. Margaret, welcome. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here. Thank you.
And Major Garrett, chief White House correspondent for CBS News, is here. Major Garrett, welcome back to On Point.
Hello, Tom.
Margaret, what do you see happening? What is happening in the relationship between the press and the president?
Inarguably, these are tension-filled times, sort of confrontational times. You know, the Correspondents Association is here to represent our members, and our president, Jeff Mason, has done a really good job throughout the last several months from the transition into the opening months of the administration about trying to keep those lines of communications open with the White House, trying off camera and behind the scenes to kind of have a mutual airing of the grievances, see where we can reach areas of cooperation. Because with any new administration, but particularly one where the candidate was had such an anti-press message, as so strong a message, we've been hopeful that kind of educating and having conversations on an ongoing basis about everything from the way the briefings work to pools and that sort of thing would help ease these tensions. And I think to some extent that's absolutely been true. But as the kind of pop culture, SNL, you know, all the high viewership for the briefings, they had kind of become this entertainment event. And the White House feels that the press is to blame for that. Many of the press feel that the White House's management of the answering of questions and the president's conduct is what spurred all the interest in that. But however you have it, I think a big part of what the White House is doing these days in terms of dialing back this very, you know, the kind of access that's been bipartisan and expected since the Clinton administration or before has to do with their own internal calculations that that these press briefings have overshadowed the president himself, that they've taken on a life of their own that they don't want. And, you know, most of our members feel that there's a real value, not just for journalists, but for the American public in being able to see as well as hear these briefings, that the on camera, on the record should be the default position.
Major Garrett, I mean, is this about negotiated details of White House press protocol and process here, cameras on, cameras off, or do we have some kind of fuller meltdown going on in this relationship between the White House and the press, the free press?
Everything about President Trump is different. Everything. And that includes his relationship, obviously hostile during the campaign and his presidency, with the embedded White House press corps. All of us are adjusting to that at a professional and, in some cases, emotional level. One thing I want to do, because I'll never get a chance to do this again, Brian Karam and I were in college together at the University of Missouri, and we worked at the student-run radio station,
wow,
KCOU.
Okay.
I'll never get a chance to talk about KCOU on Tom Ashbrook's show ever again. So KCOU, a shout-out to you, because
KCOU.
Brian and I were there together.
KCOU.
Now you're in the White House, and what's going on there, Major?
Exactly. So the White House, as Brian said, the reason Sarah Huckabee Sanders put the briefing Tuesday on camera was to run the White House truck over CNN and do so publicly, and then say what CNN did is representative of what the media does every single day, distort, hype, and therefore they are a phony institution. Everything you read that's critical of this White House should be disbelieved. Now, is that a brand new tactic? No. Educate yourself about the Washington Post and the Nixon administration during the height of Watergate. The Nixon administration did precisely the same thing. Every time there was something that either was not exactly right about a Watergate story or in some cases was spectacularly incorrect. And there were a couple of those stories during the Watergate coverage that the Post had to amend and then get right the next time. The Nixon administration tried to say the entire story and everything about it was false, derelict, and an offense to American journalism and to political conversation.
But even that, that's about a story. Donald Trump is going after pretty much...
the institution.
The institution.
The institution,
fake,
of course.
Fake news. Failing.
And the one of the larger dynamics behind this is that the president knows, because his campaign reinforced it, not only does his base feel that there is something wrong with quote-unquote mainstream media, but other semi-attached Trump supporters suspect that the media is not as trustworthy as it ought to be. And let's just go to a neutral observer on this. Gallup has been surveying this country for the better part of 30 years about the credibility of the mainstream media. I recommend to your listeners, associate yourself with those numbers. They have been in steady and persistent decline across parties for 20 years.
Okay, what's that mean?
What that means is there is something about the way we do our business and the way the public that we serve under the protection and the privilege and the responsibility of the First Amendment perceive what we do. That has been a topic within our industry almost my entire career. There's a lot of navel-gazing about it. There's a tremendous amount of questioning that goes on in newsrooms about how to approach stories, how to be fair, how to be curious, how to be accurate, how to be comprehensive. And for a number of reasons, none of which can possibly be fully aired in this broadcast, the public has pulled itself away. And this president, more than any previous occupant of the White House, wants to exploit that sense of distance between the audience and the news media itself. And he does so with enormous gusto.
He's got plenty of people who will help him do that. I mean, here's Sean Hannity opening his program last night with this big critique. Listen.
All right, history is literally happening right in front of our eyes. We have the liberal destroy Trump. Mainstream media is now in a free fall and on the brink of complete and total collapse. That's not an overstatement. It's not hyperbole. Now, these propagandists and champions of fake news continue to be exposed day after day, and CNN is leading the way.
It is overstatement. It is hyperbole. But what,
that was hyperbole.
It's all of our definition
of it. But Brian Caron,
whatever Sean
Hannity
said, it wasn't. It was. Come on.
Yeah.
Brian, what is happening here? Do we have, a kind of a tipping point where you've got a critical mass of the public who just won't go with the mainstream media anymore? Is the president winning?
I don't necessarily buy any of that. What I do remember is what Larry Speake said. He was Reagan's press secretary. He said, don't tell us how to stage the news. We won't tell you how to report it. It's very proper for a president to try and put his best foot forward and to have people to do so. That's his job. Our job is to ask questions and find the truth. This president not only is saying, don't tell me how to stage the news, but I'll tell you how to report the news. That's the difference. And Major is absolutely right.
And I will choke you off from the news that the White House makes. So
right.
One thing is important. I will take a press briefing for the President of the United States once a week, over 100 press secretary briefings
Absolutely.
Any day of the
week. But you're not getting those. He's barely available.
We're not getting those. So that's the issue. That's the real tension here.
And
we don't see the president,
and we don't see
and get anything from the press secretary that is of even nominal value. I mean, at the same press briefing yesterday, I asked Sarah Huckabee Sanders a kind of a fundamental question about health care. Rand Paul doesn't like the Senate draft by the Republicans because he doesn't believe it repeals the Affordable Care Act. I asked, does the president believe it repeals the Affordable Care Act? Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, I don't know. Now, that is not a granular question.
No.
Okay?
Yeah.
No,
that is a big picture, simple question.
Yeah.
And they can't even and won't even answer questions like
that. We've got callers for all three of you. If I may, forgive me, I want to bring in Angela, Harrisburg, North Carolina. Angela, you're on the air with Major Garrett, Margaret Tala, Brian Karam.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for taking my call. So I think that that we're playing around with this a little too much and not calling a spade a spade. I think what the real problem is, if you look back at history, the steps to creating an authoritarian regime are to discredit the free press and then create a press that's controlled by the government and then control the message. And I feel like that's the road that we're going down. And I'm, you know, frankly, it really terrifies me. And I feel like if we don't call him out on this, the president out on this, that that's the road we're going to go down.
I'll put it to the panel, Angela. I really appreciate your call. It's not as if people aren't saying something like this. I mean, we had Richard Painter tweeting yesterday. This was the chief White House ethics officer for Republican President George W. Bush tweeting, "No U.S. president before has called the press the enemy of the people." He wrote, "Dictators have said that, but no U.S. president." Margaret Tolovic, is it? Angela says, "Let's not beat around the bush. This is the way we go down an authoritarian road." How does that strike you, Margaret?
Yeah, I hear her comments, and I know a lot of people feel that way. And I hear the comments that Sean Hannity is amplifying, and I know a lot of Americans feel that way. And I think what's important to remember to me is that in the context of the modern world, the media is supported by 24-hour television coverage, Twitter, social media, and there are also many other levers of modern-day government, like the Congress and the judiciary and the investigating agencies in the United States, that mean the U.S. is in a different position than other nations in decades past. All of these principles are, of course, near and dear to me. This is my living. This is my avocation. I believe deeply in the mission of a strong free press. But for the journalists on the ground who are actually covering the White House every day, our job remains covering the White House. And part of the way you do that is by being able to ask direct questions of the president or his spokespeople. Part of the way you do that is by talking to other people outside the White House. Part of the way you do that is talking to supporters, critics, doing FOIAs, document searches. We have many levers in terms of being able to tell the public and show the public what is happening in the White House and in the government. And I think it's incredibly important for us to keep pressing for that sort of direct being able to ask and answer questions.
But Angela says, come on, she sees something like a crisis here. Do you see that, Margaret, or can you still fight the good fight with the resources and access you have?
We are fighting the good fight.
The fight for truth, the fight for clarity, transparency.
I think the WHCA has done a great job in fighting the fight. And what Margaret speaks to,
the White House Correspondents Association.
Yes, yeah. And they've represented us very well, I believe. And I think that what they do is, that's a tough position to be in. God knows I wouldn't want to be in it. I have a very light filter between what I think and what I say, so they're much better than I could ever be at that, having to deal with the White House, ensuring that we have the access, ensuring that we have the ability to speak to them, ensuring that we get answers.
Well, I don't see any ensuring going on, I have to say, watching from outside.
It's not from this side. I have seen a lack of response to emails, a lack of response to questions. It is coming from the other side, but it is coming from the top. That's the problem. And if you don't, I'll tell you, you know, Major made a point earlier, but
I got to break in just to say, Brian, Margaret, I know we have to let you go. You were kind to jump in today. I know you've got to scoop it. Thank you very much, Margaret.
Thank you, Tom,
for joining us. Sorry, Brian, please.
Now, you know, Major was making a point earlier about some of the stuff that's going on about getting simple questions answered and we're not getting them. I can't tell you the number of times they've referred to Obama or to Hillary Clinton in their answers, and I've never seen – I've heard of sore losers, but I've never seen sore winners before. The fact of the matter is they won. They're in office. It is them, as Margaret said, we're there to cover that administration and this president. And I don't think they've adjusted to the fact that they're governing yet. I think, as yesterday showed, we're still running for office. No, you've got the levers of government before you. Please answer the questions. It goes back to getting just even the simplest questions asked. Like, what is your strategy with Russia? They don't know. I asked that question in a press briefing, and I was told they would get back to me.
Major, can it run this way for another 4, 3.5 years?
Look, the tension is going to continue, and it will probably become more amplified just because we're fighting for not only our livelihood, the First Amendment, and access to the president and all the decisions that radiate from the White House, which can affect Americans in countless ways every single day. That's one of the reasons you come to the White House as a journalist, because so much happens there. So this tension will continue, and the push and pull will always be there. And I can't tell you, Tom, where it's going to go. All I know is I'm going to be there every day. Brian's going to be there every day. All the other journalists are going to be there. And we will sort it out hour by hour, day by day, probably contentiously.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's going on with the White House and the press. High tension in the briefing room, fireworks from the podium, respect kind of in the ditch, and what it all means for our democracy. Major Garrett is here, Chief White House Correspondent for CBS News. Brian Karam is here. He spoke up very publicly in that briefing, pushing back on Sarah Huckabee Sanders on Tuesday, calling her comments on a disgraceful press inflammatory. He's executive editor at the Sentinel newspapers. Columnist for Playboy joins us as well. In just a moment, Ari Fleischer joins us. He was White House press secretary from 01 to 03, the George W. Bush years there. You can join us in this conversation. What do you think? What's going off the rails here? Should the White House even have the right in our democracy to say no cameras, no audio when they're briefing on the nation's business? Is the press wrong to expect, to demand answers on what's going on? Is the press missing something here? Are the president's briefers right to be fuming? Boy, if attitudes and the way presidents talk about this president anyway, changed. Go back, this is way back now, but even so, 1962, President John F. Kennedy talking about the press and the presidency in a free society. It's not easy for presidents to put up with the tough coverage, he said, but it's important. Couldn't do the job at all in a free society without them. Here he was.
Even though we never like it, and even though we don't, even though we wish they didn't write it, and even though we disapprove, there isn't any doubt that we couldn't do the job at all in a free society without a very, very active press.
President Donald Trump maybe not so certain about that. Here he was in February criticizing fake news.
And I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news. It's fake, phony, fake. A few days ago, I called the fake news the enemy of the people, and they are. They are the enemy of the people.
Fake, phony, fake, failing, the failing media, the enemy of the people. It's incredible to think of a president of the United States going this way. But backers say maybe there's a reason. This was Monday, interview with Fox News' Tucker Carlson. Investigative journalist Cheryl Atkinson said the media pushes its own narratives.
We are getting an artificial reality created by people who are putting out narratives, whether Democrats, Republicans, or corporate interests. And people sense, at least some people, that they're not getting an accurate picture.
Well, a lot of journalists I know are certainly not trying to push a narrative. They're trying to figure out what's going on. Here was CBS former White House correspondent himself, big one, Dan Rather. This was in February, criticizing President Trump for how he treats the media. This was talking with MSNBC's Chris Matthews.
We understand what's going on here. It is an effort to divide and conquer, to divide the press from the people and to divide the press among itself. I don't think in the long run, I honestly don't think even in the short run, that it's going to work. But we've never seen anything like this in the White House, even during the worst of the Nixon period.
Dan Rather, who was there. Brian Karam is with us from Sentinel Newspapers. Major Garrett, Chief White House Correspondent for CBS News. Ari Fleischer joins us right now. White House Press Secretary, 2001-03 in the George W. Bush administration. Ari Fleischer, thank you very much for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Tom.
What do you see going on here?
Oh, my goodness. I'm just shaking my head, frankly, at the conversation. And
let's hear it.
What troubles me the most is everybody needs to cool things down, calm things down on both sides of the podium. You know, in my day when I was at the White House, if people had complaints about coverage, and it's insatiable. Reporters always have complaints about coverage. They'd come into my office, and they would talk to me there, and we'd try to iron things out. They wouldn't go on live camera at the live briefing and complain about these things. And when they do, in my judgment today, I think the press only makes themselves look worse.
Is there not a point, though, at which, I mean, when the president's saying fake, phony, fake, failing, enemy of the people?
Let me finish my thought.
Sure.
Here's why I think the press only makes themselves look worse. And the problem is not the media critics. It's the American people. A Gallup poll, as Major talked about before, said in September of 2016, just before the election, an all-time low, 32% of the American people have a great deal or fair amount of trust and confidence that the mass media will, quote, report the news fully, accurately, and fairly. The heart of its job, an all-time low. Only 14% of Republicans have faith in the press, only 30% of independents, and just 51% of Democrats.
Yep.
The press today is digging its own graveyard by
with
the troubles
respect.
They're getting themselves into by the manner in which they cover politics.
Brian, what do you say?
With respect, a couple of things. Ari said that back in his day, people would come to his office. Let's start with there. Yeah. Perhaps if we had some success in that endeavor, that would be an option. In fact, that is always the first option, not the last. The second is, also with respect, and Ari, you probably don't remember me, but I was, you know, a younger guy standing there on occasion back when you were there. You also handled things quite a bit differently, and they were a lot more professional. I never heard anyone prior to this president browbeat us so. And to sit there and expect someone, you know, I teach my kids, and my father taught me the same thing. When it comes to dealing with a bully, there's two ways. Make them your friend, or let them know that you're not going to put up with it anymore. Now, I don't speak for anybody but me. But the simple fact of the matter is, in that particular instance, it was very, very suspect to me that someone is going to sit there and call an on-camera briefing merely to bash the press. And that's what it was. And so, with all respect to everything that's been said, yeah, we have a right, and we have to exercise it, and sometimes it's pretty, and sometimes it isn't. And it would be nice, yeah, if things backed off and cooled off, but that comes also from both sides. And I don't think there's any member of the press who would love to have a confrontational relationship with the president of the United States.
Ari, what about the president, really, if I may?
I'm sorry to finish. Yep. There have been confrontations in the past.
Yep.
Sam Donaldson, you brought out Dan Rather. There have been many who have had confrontational with the president themselves, not just, you know, their press handlers. So it's
let's get to the core issue, which is the rights of the press, as Brian put it. And Brian earlier said, quote, we are the republic, unquote, and that he was being denied his, quote, constitutional right. You know, let me remind you that the place that interprets constitutional rights, the Supreme Court, allows zero press coverage as they deliberate about what their decisions will be, and then they release them to the public.
Would that be a good idea for the White House?
Allows zero coverage.
That's a different branch of government and has nothing to do with making laws.
Hang on, Brian. Hang on.
I'm sorry.
I didn't interrupt you.
You're right. I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Let me finish.
Yes, please.
I do think there is a medium ground to be achieved. And the medium ground, and this is something that Mike McCurry, former press secretary to Bill Clinton, and I have advocated for a long time, is don't cover the briefings live anymore. Allow the cameras in the room. Let the cameras roll. But this should not be a red-hot TV show. This should not be an occasion where, as it's been for decades, frankly, where the press secretary postures on his or her side of the podium and the press postures on their side of the podium. The press secretary postures for the base of supporters who are watching and for the president who's watching, and the press postures to show that they're tougher, they can ask the same question 17 different ways, and they'll get the answer that none of their colleagues were able to get. We're all better off, including the body politic, if things calm down. We have a briefing that's actually a briefing that's just one piece of many pieces of how reporters gather their news. And as anybody who's covered the White House knows, the briefing's a TV show, and that's its problem. Reporters get their news and serve the country by covering what the White House does.
So are you saying cameras but not live, Ari?
Being just a small part of it.
Are you saying cameras but not live cameras? Is that what you're suggesting?
Exactly right. That's what Mike McCurry and I are advocating. You let the cameras in the room. They can roll. That horse is out of the barn. I'm not sure you can put it back in. It wasn't so recently that cameras were allowed. I remind you that in the administration of Bill Clinton, for the first beginning of it, no cameras were allowed during the briefing except for the first 5 minutes.
Of course, that's been a long time now. If I may, Major Garrett, you
came to Mike McCurry and asked if they could have live coverage.
Yeah.
Mike allowed it, and the first briefing they ever covered live in its entirety was the Monica Lewinsky briefing.
Wow. Hello. Major Garrett, you're with CBS News. What do you think about taking live coverage out of the press briefings at the White House?
Well, I'm opposed to it as a matter of interaction with this White House because I think, as the president said in the first book he ever wrote, The Art of the Deal, you push for maximalist position and then you take what you can get. So I'm not going to give anything up in any negotiation with this or any other White House, point one. But Ari, who I've known for many, many years, knew him before he was White House press secretary. Yep. I've known him after that, have deep respect for him, had an institutional approach to dealing with the White House press corps that served his president and I think served the country well. I agree with him in one point. When the media becomes itself a part of this story at an emotional level, it sends a signal to certainly Trump supporters and even those mildly attached to the president that the media is in some way self-serving. And I've always believed, and I operate this way as a reporter, I'm only as good as the last story I broadcast or the last story I wrote. And every single day that I think I'm part of the story, I'm getting in the way of that process. I'm not part of the story. Journalism stands on its own. And I believe in this very tense experiment we're going through, the better the journalism, the quieter the journalism, the more persistent the journalism is, the more over time the value of that will make itself self-evident.
But the president
of
the United States.
The less emotionally we are involved in that process, yep. the better off we will be. So on that point, I agree with Ari.
But the president of the United States is making the media and its members a story. I mean, repeatedly, he's going after them. I mean, look
certainly.
At these tweets today,
certainly,
going
certainly,
after
look,
Mika Brzezinski's facelift.
Let's not be babies about this. Let's not be babies about this, okay?
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
I have a unique experience in this conversation because in 2009, I was this chief White House correspondent for the Fox News Network. Now, many people forget this, but the Obama administration, at its highest levels, went after my network and me personally as an illegitimate, phony reporter.
I remember.
And they were at war with me. Their words, not mine.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
I was never provoked. I never treated them antagonistically. I did my job. And let me tell you this. Back then in 2009, this little conversation we're having didn't really occur. All right? It was a seated president of the United States telling one journalism organization in this country that it was phony, illegitimate, and an affront to American journalism. And I was at the center of that. It was the most stressful part of my career.
Yeah.
And it never changed the way I approached my job. I tell you now, as I told myself then, journalism will win out. Do your job, and things will sort themselves out.
Call from Oklahoma City. David is on the line. Hi, David. You're on the air with Ari Fleischer, Major, Brian. What do you see?
Hi, Tom Panel. I am absolutely dumbfounded at the inability for people to truly look at the big picture here. I mean, these are not press briefings. They're propaganda briefings. And when any kind of policy question is asked, it's, I haven't talked to the president or I don't know. There's never a policy question answered. But Trump's propaganda is perpetuated every single day. You know, Fox News and Breitbart are as close to state-run media as you can get. I grew up in Haiti under François Duvalier. This is exactly what he did. He came in, he said, you know, everything you're hearing and reading is a lie. I'm the one telling the truth, and very gradually took over. The bigger thing is, when you look at the Justice Department, at the Defense Department, and the unfilled number of positions there, which are critical to operating the Republic, they're non-existent. He's not filling those seats. And this is all, in my estimation, just part of the dismantling of the Republic. When he talks about collusion with his team, team when they were running for president, he sort of overlooks the fact that there are two issues here. There's that collusion and there's the fact that Russia intervened. He has no interest in discussing or doing anything about, you know, stirring up cyber security.
Yeah, David, we've got that. Ari Fleischer, you hear there from Oklahoma City, a listener who grew up in Haiti and sees shades of Papa Doc Duvalier in the discrediting of the press. How's that strike you?
Yeah, frankly, when I said everybody needs to calm down, this is a piece of it, too. I'm rather in the middle. I have criticized Donald Trump, and I'll continue to do so, and I will praise him when I think he deserves praise.
Yep.
But when I hear people say that he's trying to dismantle the Republic, frankly, it pushes me in the pro-Trump direction because the criticism is so over the top. And I do think Donald Trump has a legitimate case to make that the press has been brutally unfair to him. You know, go back to his convention speech, which the New York Times said was strikingly dim. The Washington Post called it apocalyptic. Los Angeles Times, unusually.
Well, I listened to it. It was very dark. I was there in the hall.
Fairly dark.
It was.
75% of the public felt positive about it, a CNN poll later showed. The press repeatedly denounces what Donald Trump does, while much of the public liked what Donald Trump does. And the press is in a different place. They're in their own bubble. They have been unfair to Donald Trump, and they've been unfair to me. I've given quotes to the media in which I said, after Sean Spicer's, what I viewed as a terrible first briefing, when I said if Sean Spicer fumbled the ball on Saturday, he picked it up and ran for a first down on Monday. ABC News took my quote and just said Sean Spicer fumbled the ball. You know, this is the type of thing that the Trump White House has legitimate grounds to complain
about. Well, isn't
they
that part of
news? I don't use those words, but I do think the press was soft on Obama and overly tough on Trump.
Brian?
With respect, as far as if you've ever been in the news, you know daggone well that you're never going to get, as you had a nice little excerpt from John Kennedy saying that, you know, this is what you have to put up with. And that is, you know, all right, I believe you. And I've had it happen to me myself, and I understand that. Nonetheless, we're imperfect human beings trying to do an imperfect job as they are. It crosses the line when you call us enemies of the people. It crosses the line when you say fake media. And that's my issue. No reporter that I know wants to be the story. You can, you know, you're famous. Yeah, George Clooney is famous. We're reporters. Okay, that's a given. Nobody goes into this business ever that I know of thinking they're going to be, you know, George Clooney. The point is that when you tell me I'm an enemy of the public, is, you know, that's the point where I go, wait a minute, this isn't even close to reality. Some line has been crossed.
I criticized President Trump on Twitter and publicly on TV when he said enemy of the people. That's what I mean about both sides need to calm down. Yeah. But with all due respect, I also think you crossed the line at that briefing when you brought your personal emotions and your personal editorial opinion about press coverage into what should be a government briefing.
That I appreciate that.
You should have been had in private, or you should have had it with media shows that would have publicized what you had to say. It's a point
I appreciate
of view.
That.
It doesn't belong in the briefing.
I appreciate what you say. I will say it this way. When she did what she did, she crossed the line, and it was not right to castigate the media in that particular setting. And at that point in time, I felt it was necessary to speak up.
Major Garrett, does this get better before it gets worse?
Probably not. I think this is the lines are drawn, and we're just going to show up every day and do the job the best we can. And the least emotion that we bring to it, and the most persistence, curiosity, and intensity we bring to it, and fairness and accuracy, the better off we'll be.
Amen. Let's go.
I agree with that.
Major Garrett with CBS News, Brian Karam with the Sentinel Newspapers and Playboy, Ari Fleischer, former White House press secretary. Our deep thanks to all three of you for being with us today. Thank you very much. Listeners across the country, thank you for joining us today and every day. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.